Wells got right in his face.
Your wife is dead. Your children are dead. All you knew is dead. These are the facts, Tanner. This is the future.
No, sir, it is not. Your future, perhaps, not mine.
Get him the hell out of here. Take him away before I do something I'll regret.
Emily Tanner was long dead, long buried. Her mortal remains had decayed into dust within the confines of the family vault, a great marble edifice located high atop a steep hill among a smattering of trees, ancient trees with skeletal branches reaching for heaven, and settling instead for their positions of anguish, arms held high in sympathetic agony surrounding the burial chambers. Her husband knew this to be true. Once the future year he'd been trawled into was revealed, and his mind had wrapped itself around the inescapable truth that he had indeed traveled 100+ years in the span of a single, heart-bursting moment. He looked down at the photograph and wished more than ever to be at her side, alive or dead.
I wish to go to Deadwood.
No way. You know the rules. If the powers that be find I snuck you photos of the family tomb, they'd have both our asses.
How did you happen to come upon said photographs, dear Alan?
Alan Harvey grinned mischievously, his wide black face crinkling inward in a maze of smile lines. He liked Tanner. The burly security man had spoken with the refugee from time to time on many a long night, finding him to be one of the most gifted conversationalists Alan had ever encountered.
Your file. Hard data. Most of what they have on you has been encrypted and scanned into the Kronos master database. I don't have proper clearance to take a peek, and even if I did, they'd soon find out about it. But even records stored on computers have to start somewhere, and when I had a chance to glance through your paper file, I snatched those babies up.
Will they not be missed?
Doubt it. Like I said, most of the idiots in here can't deal with anything unless it comes over a computer screen.
One day, Alan, one day I shall be joined with them. Dear sweet Emily and my son and daughter.
The large black man nodded.
You mean when you die, old guy?
No, noble Alan. I mean when I find my way back home.
The man who'd introduced himself as Dr. Silas Jamivu gave Ryan a mildly petulant look.
You have me at a disadvantage.
How so?
Ryan's six-hour P-226 was aimed squarely at the heart of the well-dressed speaker. Behind the one-eyed man, the rest of his people had struck similar positions of defense with their own weaponry as they exited the Matrans chamber. The two sec men Ryan had spied earlier had now lost their non-threatening stances and held their own auto-rifles aimed at him, responding in kind to the positions Ryan's group had assumed.
No advantage here. You got blasters, we got blasters.
All God's children have blasters, my friend. Having a firearm is of no real advantage to either one of us here, since there would be more casualties than survivors. What I was referring to was that you have my name, but I do not have yours.
Sometimes the giving of names had been a thorny subject between Ryan and J.B. Dix. The armorer, being of a more subtle nature, would just as soon give out an alias when shoved into an unknown situation with guns aimed at their vitals. Their true names weren't unknown in the Deathlands, and both men had left behind plenty of enemies in their travels, at least the few enemies who had survived the run-in. Ryan was of a different opinion. As part of his own personal code, a man was only as good as his name, and as such he chose to offer his freely if asked, unless doing so would assure him of being chilled on the spot. A long time ago, when he first joined Trader's caravan of warwags, he'd stopped using the last name of Cotter and rejected the family heritage. Now he took some quiet pride in being a Cotter, while remaining true to how his father would have wanted him to live. Still, Ryan Cotter might be stubborn, but he wasn't stupid. In this case, his real name wouldn't be a factor in ending or prolonging their current situation.
Name's Ryan Cotter.
He gestured with his head to the rest of the group.
That's my boy, Dean. Lady with the red hair is Christy Roth, and next to her in the specs is J.B. Dix. Dr. Mildred Wythe is on the far left in the denim jacket. And beside her is Jack Lauren.
Ryan immediately regretted his slip. Usually the knowledge that Mildred was a physician was a closely guarded secret.
The skinny gent with the walking stick is known as Doc Tanner.
Taking Christie's hand and raising it to kiss, Jamais-Vu paused after his lips brushed the redhead's warm skin.
All that is in you is voluptuous and light, sweet, gentle, caressing, and tender. And your moral world owes its enchantment to the sweet influence of your external world.
Doc's eyes lit up.
Is that verse?
Jamais-Vu lowered Christie's hand and nodded at Tanner.
Indeed.
How quaint to be greeted in such a fashion, with soothing words instead of bullets. I must confess, as well read as I am, I do not recognize the poet. Might you enlighten me as to his name?
He's a local, was a local. José Gautier Benítez. Died back in 1880, before my time, but some of his work can be found here in the library. I've tried to immerse myself in the culture and history as best I could. It pays to know your neighbors.
Christie grinned.
Doc can't resist a good chunk of verse.
So many doctors among you. Your people come equipped with many blessings.
Jamais-Vu then paused to look at Doc.
Doc, Tanner, you say?
Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner, at your service.
It can't be.
Oh, but I assure you, sir, I am who I am, I think. Truth be told, there are many days I have my doubts as well.
The man in the white lab coat stepped closer, waving back his watchman, and approached Doc, looking him over from head to toe.
Christ, Dr. Tanner, what in the hell happened to you?
Doc was slightly puzzled by the line of questioning.
A lifetime of tragedies, I'm afraid. Which one are you referring to?
I've read of you in the old Redoubt computer database records on time trawling. I studied your case from your arrival in pre-nuclear conflict 1998 until the year 2000, when you were sent ahead as a final part of the experiment. But there was nothing about such severe deterioration on your trawl forward into the future, our present day. And from what I read, I don't think you've been here long enough to have aged so drastically, have you?
I have not. My current appearance is an unfortunate side effect, courtesy of the destructive currents of the time-trawling process. Why it did not occur the first time I was swept away is a mystery to me.
Well, damnation. This buggers all of my research.
Research?
Yes, Doctor. Wyeth, was it? Research. I have spent the last 2 years rebuilding and experimenting with the Matrans chamber behind you.
Jamais-Vu gestured floridly at the huge room that housed the gateway. A full computer lab with multiple stations and units, a small reception lounge, and other odds and ends in the high-ceilinged yet cluttered area. Ryan eyeballed the elegant gray-haired man standing next to Doc with suspicion. Already Ryan was unhappy with Jamais-Vu and his seemingly lackadaisical attitude at having armed strangers pop up in what appeared to be his own private Matrans unit.
What kind of experiments?
Why, time-trawling experiments, my friends. Your Doc Tanner and I share something in common regarding our places in this dark future world. Neither of us are supposed to be here.
You were trawled?
No, I was a corpse-sickle. Cryosleep.
Mildred was about to speak up with a pithy, "That makes two of us," but a warning look from JB stilled her planned quip. Apparently the Armorer thought that piece of information should remain private, at least for now. Unfortunately, no such exchange of looks occurred with Doc.
That was the fate of our own Dr. Wyeth.
So, two of my visitors are even more special than imagined.
Jamais-Vu gave a dismissive gesture to the twin guards.
Garcia, Lopez, you may depart. I have nothing to fear from these men and women.
But, Doctor...
Silence! Do as you are told. If you wish to assist, please inform the kitchen we have company for dinner. I'll be along shortly to discuss the meal in greater detail.
Jamais-Vu led them upward out of the secured Matrans chamber and into the antique-appointed fortress interior.
Where is this place, anyway? Doesn't look like any redoubt I've ever seen.
This isn't a redoubt. Other than some rudimentary remodeling by myself, the gateway and control you saw on the lowest level are the only hints of any links to Project Cerberus, Operation Kronos, or even the Totality concept. You've arrived in Puerto Rico, Mr. Dix, and this is the famed El Morro Fortress, which has stood watch over the waters here for hundreds of years, and will still be standing after hundreds more, and all of us are dust.
Funny, You don't look Puerto Rican.
I'm not. Originally, I'm from Ohio by way of Ireland. I take it all of you are from the United States?
It has a new name now. Most call it the Deathlands.
How charming.